Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is brought to you by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in new ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 194 of the podcast with Allison Oliver, illustrator of the Babylit board book series written by Jennifer Adams and published by Gibbs Smith Books. Allison's illustrations have been taking up residence in our nursery, and each board book adaptation of a literary classic is more charming and more wonderful than the one previous. It was a great treat to get to talk to someone who has spent so much time creating art for the very youngest readers and pre-readers, and I hope you enjoy our chat as well. Here is episode number 194 of the podcast with Allison Oliver. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Allison Oliver. I am super excited to talk to you tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Allison, you're in our bedtime routine a lot, and you're even having artwork that's being nibbled on by my daughter. How cool is that to have an artist that gets artwork near devoured?
It is pretty cool. Which book is it?
Julia is currently working on The Wonderful Wizard of Oz.
That's an extra tasty one.
Good. Well, thank you in advance for that, you know, the whatever you did with the flavors to make it work out for her, for a teething baby. It's really a wonderful gift that you've done there.
Sure.
Allison, I was excited to get connected with you because you are a name that I recognize so much for, specifically in this way, for the art that you're doing with Jennifer Adams, adapting sort of these classic pieces of literature for adults into these wonderful, wonderful board books for our youngest readers that really, in a really sort of masterful way, take the key concepts of the story and graphically display it. And it for an adult reading it to the child, I'm marveling at just how expertly it's pulled off. I mean, to distill a book like The Wizard of Oz down to a couple words is pretty incredible.
Wow. Yeah, that's Jennifer. I work with a really great author who completely understands the classics, so she makes my job so much easier.
Did you get paired up with her early on? Like, was this something, did you know her ahead of time, or you've just sort of things worked well from the beginning, and so you've just worked together ever since? Because you've done a ton together, right? Like something like 5 million books. I think I read 5 million board books.
Five or six. I can't really keep track. No, 20. I think it's just 20 at this point.
20. Okay. Yeah. No, it's nearly almost name the classic, and Jennifer has done one, and it's great again to see as well that you're the illustrator throughout them, that there's this consistent consistent illustrator, and yet the approach that you've used on each of them is so varied and really beautiful, really.
Thank you so much. That it's the unique challenge of Baby Lit is that they have to feel cohesive as a set, because they are a series, but each book is so different. It's its own world with its own themes and characters and everything. So I feel like my approach has to change every time we start a new one.
Right. Did you...
So that's...
Oh, go ahead.
That's really the fun part of doing it.
It's just changing the approach. I mean, as a consumer, I would feel like some of these books are books that we have grown up with or have had read to us over and over and over. I'm thinking like Alice in Wonderland or something like that. Or just knowing forever, Pride and Prejudice or Romeo and Juliet. So to be able to go into a bookstore, as it were, and sort of find, oh, this is the Baby Lit version of this book that was classic to me. You're having different entry levels that way. I suppose there's probably lots of people that just devour all of the Little Master series. But for those that are just connecting with the classics that are dear to them, it's neat that you both are able to approach them all so differently that it really looks like each book was given its own attention and time and is allowed to stand as a feature of its own.
Oh, thank you. That's the ultimate goal.
How long have you been doing these together? When did the first one come out?
It was 2011.
Oh, wow. So you continue to create them. Am I right?
Yeah, I just handed two more in today, actually.
Nice. What are the two new ones that you've handed in?
The two new ones are Les Mis.
Oh, my word.
That was a hard one. That would be a French primer.
And love it.
Midnight's Dream, which will be a fairies primer.
Fairies primer. And we have, yeah, I should say that when you go through these, it helps that you've got great previews of them on your site so as to remember the different primers that you have. Like Moby Dick is an ocean primer and Wuthering Heights is a weather primer. So we're taking those concepts, the early learning concepts, but also then applying them to the books, to the classic stories. And again, I think the way that the bits that Jennifer has pulled out, but also the way that you're illustrating them really brings back the entire story to my mind. And that, I don't know, it's just, it's so hard that I can't find the words to talk to you right now, Allison. I feel like I never get flubbed over my words. And yet I'm just so, I really am so amazed that this is pulled off so well. I think because we've got so many board books that you get handed down, unfortunately, that are just like cheap, consumable. We know your baby's going to chew on this. Just give them this. It'll be fine. And I know that there are really exceptional board books coming out. But yet at the same time, I know that it's so easy when someone goes to buy expectant parents' books, it's so easy to just buy the board books of the classics that we already know, like Goodnight Moon and Very Hungry Caterpillar. And those are all wonderful, but there are such really wonderful board books coming out that are intended strictly to be, as you're calling them, Baby Lit. This is, there's an audience in mind that is the whatever 0 to 2 range, 0 to 3 range. And that is who you are focusing all of these efforts on, and to know that those books are being created specifically for them is something that I really appreciate when I'm able to step back and enjoy these books again with my daughter, who just, I turn the page, and this is all credit to you, and I can see her eyes tracking over the page at the contrasting colors that you have and at the ways that certain colors pop, and that is something exciting to me as well.
Wow, that's really flattering. And that's what we hope for. And the publisher, I think that was really the great thing about their concept was, like you said, they were initially, board books were just kind of reproducing picture books in board book versions. So to come up with a concept specifically for that audience and treating it as its own entity, I think really is what makes it special and something that kids that age were going to respond to better, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that, yeah. I mean, I think having a basic knowledge of development of young children, I think, and knowing also that these are being read. I mean, I don't think it can be understated that books, especially at the young age, need to entertain both audiences. You have to hook the parent because the parent needs to want to read that book over and over and over to the baby or to the young child, but also that young child needs to want to see it and want to hear it. I have a 6-month-old, as I said, a baby, as I said, and also a 5-year-old. And my 5-year-old only now is getting to the point where he will allow me or where he will take interest in hearing a book a second time, which partly I think is because he just wants to consume as much as he can, which is wonderful. But
yes, it is.
But that's also to say that he's figuring out what his preference is, and to have a book that you want to hear over and over is something that I think, I don't know how you plan that, but when you have it, especially as an artist, when you have that there is a book being read over and over and over, that's a really cool thing, right? To see someone return over and over to your art, because that's your art right there. That's your portfolio. That's your gallery right there in that book, bound up in that book that they're holding and sometimes chewing on.
yeah, that's, I mean, that is the highest compliment that a book illustrator could have, is a kid that wants to look at it, you know, more than once. I remember, you know, my favorite book, and that was the one book that I wanted to check out from the library over and over and over. And that was when my mom had to introduce to me the idea that you have to share with other kids and you can't just recheck it out. You have to leave it in the library for a couple of weeks and let everyone enjoy it. And then you can go back and get it again.
Oh, but, do you remember the book? What was that book?
Oh, sure. It was Whistle for Willie by Ezra Keats.
Yes. Whistle for Willie. And you just wouldn't allow them to check it out just each week.
No, I wanted to go in and just have them restamp the library card so I could just keep it.
That's but, what I yeah, have too. I'm a school librarian and we get kids that return. I tell them that they can renew the book. So ultimately they could have it for like 4 weeks if they want. But we get them, they return the book. It goes onto the return cart. And then during their class, I had it happen just today. During their class, they walk around to the book cart, to the return cart, because we haven't shelved them yet. And they take the same book off the shelf and check it out again. And they're proud about it, too. Mr. Winner, look what I got. Didn't you just return that particular, whatever, Elephant and Piggy book? Yeah, I'm going to read it again. All right, you do whatever you want, buddy. That's great. I think there's also that... I think for a child, there's probably that sort of pride and ownership and love felt when you know a story and you feel the story connect with you. It becomes very personal. And so you want to check that book out again because I think that it helps you feel a little bit more whole, or helps you understand yourself a little bit better, which is so important at that young age.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it's, I think it's so interesting as an adult to look back at what your favorite book was.
Right.
I have this thing where I ask my friends, and sometimes I put it on my blog, what was their favorite book as a kid? And then we talk about then what occupation they ended up doing as an adult. And so often you could see it in the book that they loved as a kid. Like it was the thing that they love to do now is right there in the story.
Oh my word. I feel like now I'm sitting and now I'm laying on the couch in the therapy office. My favorite book, my favorite book was Scuttles the Tugboat, a golden book. And I think that it would not be difficult to draw ties between that hardworking tugboat and how I just sort of am constantly taking on big tasks because I like the chug of working on that, despite the stormy weather. Now let's see if I can concentrate on talking to you and not Scuttles the Tugboat for the rest of the conversation. Oh, man. So, Allison, did you get into... What came first here for you? I know that you have an illustration and design background. Were you working in illustration and design prior to coming into working on picture books? I mean, there is certainly such a natural tie-in to designing, I don't know, layouts for cards and for websites and things like that, and then telling a story, not only from a website, but then telling a story in a book. So I get that there's that overlap, but what was the path for you?
It was design first. I had a design studio. I started a design studio in 1999. So I was doing that for a long time. And always in the back of my mind, I wanted to illustrate a picture book. And I think around 2005, I had a picture book idea that I had written and illustrated. And I even got an agent for it. And every editor in the world turned it down. But all the rejection letters were pretty nice and often said that they liked the art but not the story. So I thought, oh, well, maybe I should get somebody else to write it for me and illustrate their words. But I hadn't gotten around to that either. And I was the publisher, Gibb Smith, that does Baby Lit. They were kind of a new client, and I had just designed a couple books for them because I had done a lot of book design at that point. And they didn't know I had an interest in it or anything. And the publisher called me one day and said, I have this project, illustration project, and I was wondering if you would do a test illustration for it.
Nice.
Yeah, she had no idea. And so it was Pride and Prejudice. And so I did the test illustration, and then I got the job. We did Pride and Prejudice and Romeo and Juliet first.
Mm.
And, you know, then she told me that her plan was for it to be a series, and we just see how it went. And we haven't stopped.
And off it went, yeah. Do you sign contracts for like two at a time or something? Is there a foreseeable end, or do you have that great luck of getting to just sort of keep creating until you and Jennifer think it's enough?
Yeah, I mean, we just do contracts for each book, and we've been doing them two per season. So I guess when we all decide it's over, it'll be over. I don't know.
That's awesome that you've gotten to just keep it two at a time and you're up to 16 or 20. That's amazing. I think that's amazing.
It has happened really fast.
Well, and you said what, like 2000 something, very recently, 11?
2011, yeah.
That the first one came out. That is very fast. You clearly are working nonstop.
But, I work a lot, yeah.
But that's good because we get to see these beautiful things when you're done. That's a wonderful thing. You're making the world more beautiful. Thank you, Allison.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, do you, are there any classics that you've pitched to Jennifer? Hey, what about trying this? What about an idea for that?
I think Huckleberry Finn was me.
Yeah.
And really, all the other ones I've suggested, she has a running list that she keeps.
Oh, nice.
And I think everyone I've said, she's like, yeah, it's on there. It's coming.
Yeah.
But she kind of maps it out with a bigger strategy, you know, for the overall series. So they're not that random. She kind of has a plan, I think, so.
Well, if you're bouncing, I wonder, between, yeah, like an animal's primer and then sounds and then numbers, it makes sense that there could be this sort of focus moving forward that we want to sort of hit different concepts.
Yeah.
But that's great. Man, that's so smart. And I love that you all have so many. You just got so many. They're so good. I mean, I guess I keep marveling too, Allison, that they look so different. They just look designed different to me. And that shouldn't be a surprise. But where the surprise comes then is that we have Pride and Prejudice, and I pick that up and go like, oh my word, this was done by these ladies too. Just that. Not that there's a bunch of different people all sort of riffing on this same idea of redoing the classics, but that it's you too. You two are the ones that I'm seeing or that are drawing my eye because of your aesthetic and because of just how solid they are. So that's just awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Do you, what's the life of a board book? Do board books often go into reprintings, or is it very, very easy to keep them in reprint? I know that sometimes with a picture book, there's one run, and it's, I think, not uncommon for that one run to sort of be it, or maybe it'll go to a second run, but that tends to be it. But purchasing for babies, I don't know. I'm sort of wrestling with this thought as I'm saying it, so sorry. But it seems to me like so many more people, that's a thing that we do when we have a baby shower. We buy a lot of board books. That's what we do. Does that reflect in I don't know, the print run that you have for these books? That was a weird question. God, I apologize in advance. That was horrible. That was horrible, Allison.
I mean, I don't always know the numbers on that stuff, so I can't speak with that much accuracy, but I know that they definitely do more than one run of each one. But right. Then occasionally they adjust the numbers of the first run. So I'm not sure where they are with that.
But it's not as far as I've seen, it's not as though any of them are out of print yet, right? I think that we can still sort of get all of them.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's sort of the main, that's a good thing. And does that, I mean, maybe that comes with going through Gibbs Smith, maybe because that's a priority for them to be able to keep these in print. That's a thing or not. Who knows? I don't know. But it's good that they are able to be in print. Are you still working on a book of your own?
I have an idea I'm trying to figure out that's different than that one from a long time ago.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yay. Is it, is there ever time to do it? You've got all this other design work you have going on as well as these books, two a season? What did you say?
Yeah, 4 a year.
Oh my gosh.
So no, there's not that
there's
much
no time.
Time.
Oh man. Well, but still some time. I'm sure you have time to sketch and just have time off of different ideas to be able to just let your brain wander on other things.
Yeah, I'm trying to do that. That is definitely a project I'd still like to do.
So, yeah, and whatever that ends up looking like will be fun too, because I know that I've browsed your site an awful lot. We connected a long time ago to record this, and so I've had a lot of time to browse Sugar, your illustration and design page, and I feel like I've gotten to know you as an artist, which is exciting for me because I don't know that I often get to talk to people that have such varied sensibilities on one page, to get to see the different web design you've done and the different things you've done for Chronicle, that I ended up recognizing some of that work and going, oh, this is a person behind just the layout of the book itself, the design of the book itself, knowing how to design a book to make that content look even more attractive and even, push us even more to explore the every page of the book. There's just all these different things I'm marveling over what you do, which I guess just comes from being a designer, having a design background, but that's just a new area for me to explore. So I definitely, there's a lot of wonder around the stuff you do for me.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you. Yeah, I think the design part probably helps in the illustration of the book. I think I went to a show. It was an Ezra Keats show, actually. And they had all his original artwork for The Snowy Day and Whistle for Willie. And you could see, I mean, first of all, that he was completing, you know, one of those spreads would be one piece of art, all hand done and beautiful and perfect. But he would be leaving the spaces open for the type to be inserted. And it was remarkable to me because to me, it would be so hard to have those two processes be separate.
Yeah. You mean to see...
Because now I feel like...
To not be putting the words in while you go.
Yeah, I'm kind of designing it and illustrating at the same time. Like, the words are becoming part of the artwork.
Yeah. Do you do all of your design on digitally, or do you... Like, when you go to jump in on one of these projects, are you able to just sort of jump in and start throwing ideas down onto the screen and manipulating them around? Or do you sketch out first?
No. For the books, I sketch first.
Do you? Yeah.
And then it depends. Then the process is different depending on the book. A lot of times it would be that I would sketch. I always seem to get the shapes better with my very first sketch, which is often looks, you know, terrible, but for some reason the shape of whatever I'm drawing is usually best. And then I can redraw it in Photoshop and do all the color work in there. But then I'm always adding, I leave some of the handmade parts in and I add handmade textures and things. But like for Wizard of Oz, because that was a colors primer. And for some reason, with the Wizard of Oz and it being a colors primer and what a big deal color is in the movie version of Wizard of Oz, I was trying to think of what is kind of the ultimate way of expressing color. And I kept thinking of Matisse making those paper cutouts that he did. So I started doing those characters by just cutting out pieces of colored construction paper. Oh. And that's how I ended up doing the whole book. I would draw the details onto the paper and then scan it all in and compose it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was fun. It was super time consuming.
Yeah, I'm sure it was, because you've got a ton of illustration on each spread. But to cut them all out, that's... Oh, I love the notion of how you approach that, too. That's great. Huh. Yeah, especially like all of the forest and the witch's hat, it allows the sort of bent, straight, crooked shapes to be a little bit more unbending, a little bit more rigid, and it allows then those round shapes to feel a little bit more welcoming. I could see very easily how being able to hold a pair of scissors and manipulate the paper that way in your hands would be able to yield a result like that, perhaps better than, you know, manipulating circles with a pen or a mouse on your screen. Huh.
Yeah. For some reason, I felt like that process for Wizard of Oz, since we were focusing on color, was making it more about colors and shapes. In maybe more of a pure way.
Yeah.
And then I liked that once I scanned them in, you could see the cut mark, the edges are kind of funny. You can see that they were lifting off the scanner a little bit, and I left all that in.
What other, I'm not going to find the right word. How else have you illustrated some of the other, Little Masters books? Are there different approaches that stand out, like this one being cut paper? Were there other methods you used on other ones that you were particularly happy with the way they turned out?
I liked on Sherlock Holmes, we did the Hounds of the Baskervilles.
Yes.
And I used a lot of charcoal.
All right. And that was another, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to really get the kind of a detective-y film noir Sherlock Holmes-y feel. So I used a lot of charcoal.
Yeah, and the graphic text you have in that is super fun too. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to make it feel a little bit like a vintage movie poster.
Yeah. I love the, you say the vintage movie poster, the art you did on Jabberwocky reminds me for some reason of this old Disney cartoon to me. And it must be just the colors, the way the colors are on top of each other. For some reason, I just keep thinking of this Disney cartoon of the three caballeros. I don't know why.
Just that's nice.
Maybe the bright colors, I don't know what it is, but that, I haven't seen that cartoon in forever, but the colors immediately said that to me. There must be something about something in that's bringing that back to me, but yeah.
Oh, that's great. I have to look that up now.
Oh, yeah. It could just be that my memory is just butchering everything, but yeah, I don't know. To be able to approach different things like that, like in Moby Dick, to have just sort of the blue and red and white and managing all the illustration through that really strict color palette too, is something that I really responded to. There's just lots of things like that where I'm saying to, you know, those listening that haven't seen this yet, that just every one of these primers is so different and is so, it feels like not only did Jennifer do a really good job listening to the story itself and then doing an expert job pulling out these different primer themes to accentuate the story, not just say, oh, it's Huck Finn, so we're going to talk about there's water and there's these friends and then whatever, not at all sort of dumbing down or degrading the source content, but rather lifting it up and building an appreciation for it. Not that at the age that the kids are consuming it can't appreciate it that way, but if you have, as I do, a bigger brother that's reading it or looking at it with the younger sibling, then there's absolutely a curiosity that happens immediately. The book wasn't made for a 5 or 6 or 7 year old, but that's not at all meaning that they can't enjoy it as well and find something to connect with it as well. And I found that it raises a lot of questions. And so I think the way that each one is so carefully designed, not only, again, yeah, for Jennifer picking out just the right words and just the right descriptions, but then for you, I'm hearing the way that you were saying wanting to approach Wizard of Oz with that Matisse style, where you're focusing on color, where color was speaking so loudly, being not only a colors primer, but wanting to showcase those colors popping out in this world of the wonderful Wizard of Oz. That, I don't know, I just feel like you two just have exceptional talents. And then to be working together just makes that book all the more come across so effective.
Thank you. I think the thing that I think is really great about the books is that if the parent has a particular book that they love, their favorite book, they can bring whatever they want to the story.
There you go.
You know, they always have the space to tell more of the story if they want to.
Yeah, there is that space there that, oh, here's the tiger Shere Khan, and why is there a tiger in there? Well, let me tell you, if you wanted to, let me tell you a little bit more about the story and what happens with Mowgli or in whatever case, in The Wizard of Oz, in whatever, you get to talk more about that, the relationship of the characters and the illustration and the setting. You're right.
Yeah.
I am excited about what works you have coming up. I actually am I'm actually now like fixated on Jennifer's master list of all the ideas she's considering too, which is really exciting. Especially at 4 coming out a year, it will be exciting to see what is in store and what you all share with our youngest readers. Allison, thank you so much for coming on to talk to me, and especially for letting me just be a blabbering fool over the great, great work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
Before you head out, I'd love to ask you the traditional question around the podcast, and also I'm excited to see your response because of the way that this does get at those people that you admire the most. So I'm assembling an all-star kidlit dream team kickball tournament, and I would love to know what one person alive or past from the kidlit world you would want on your team and why.
Can it be a character?
Sure, I'll allow it.
Okay. I would have to go with Snoopy. Though, the smart choice would probably be Lucy, because she's pretty shrewd with a ball, as we know.
This is true.
But I would always have to go with Snoopy. If anyone would ever be on my team, I think Snoopy is maybe the best character that was ever created. So I'd go with
him. Wow, high praise. I like that. The best character ever created. How do you feel about the new trailers? I've been excited to see my son seeing the Peanuts characters in a new light. The animation looks interesting to me.
To me too. I really don't have a good sense of what the whole movie will be like. Yeah. So I am excited to see it too. And anything that would keep Snoopy in rotation with new kids would make me happy.
Right? Just to have a character live on in more and more stories. It's amazing. It's amazing that character has, you know, that our parents and our grandparents and now us and now our children are connecting with the same character and loving the same character.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Because he's the greatest character ever invented.
Would you ever design anything with Snoopy, or would that like freak you out to work with a character that you know, love so much?
You know, I did one time. United Artists hired Sugar to do an exploratory design project for the Snoopy brand. Oh. And it was really difficult for me. I mean, it's fun because you have the whole library of every comic strip ever made that you can just through and pull out every little pose that Snoopy ever did. But it's hard to handle him and make and feel like you're doing exactly the right thing because he's such an icon.
Well, I love ending on that note. Admiration for such a beloved character. Allison, this was wonderful to connect with you tonight. Thank you so much for the work you and Jennifer are doing to connect with our readers and to draw children into books, as well as draw these parents, these new parents, these young parents, and returning parents to really exceptional literature for our youngest readers. I am so thankful that you are out there in the world creating for our kids.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for what you do.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the books at allthewonders.com. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.